So, yeah, I'm open to taking questions if anyone, or you know, topics, questions or topics. Yes.
When you feel like you got to a plateau in your Krishna consciousness, how do you persevere? How do you get past that? How do you push on?
Okay. Any others? Yes, Kartik Hale.
I was reading in the Bhagavatam when King Parikshit saw the personality of Kali healing the bull, Dharma. And so Maharaj Parikshit got really upset about it, and there was a conversation going between them. Finally, Maharaj Parikshit says, you know, we're going to punish this. Yeah, we're going to punish him. And Dharma the bull said, well, we got to understand that whatever happens to us is because Krishna wants it to happen, no matter whether it's good or bad. And then he said, and based on that, we never point out to the perpetrator, because then we'll get the same destination that the perpetrator goes. And that's, I have a question about that. Why, I mean, somebody doing something wrong, and somebody brings up that he's doing something wrong, why is that this person bringing it up, he gets the same reaction as the one that he had to do?
Okay. So, my carcass. Or, can we get a, do you see a first canto? Or do we have to ask Nityananda Chandra? So I'm going to read that section because the whole thing is very instructive. And coincidentally, I heard Srila Prabhupada in a lecture today speak about how Maharaj Parikshit was touring his kingdom and he found the low-class man beating the cow. So I think it's a sign. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17. Punishment and Reward of Kali. Text 1. Translation. Suta Goswami said, after reaching that place, Maharaj Parikshit observed that a lower caste Shudra, dressed like a king, was beating a cow and a bull with a club, as if they had no owner. The bull was as white as a white lotus flower. He was terrified of the Shudra who was beating him, and was so afraid that he was standing on one leg, trembling and urinating. Although the cow is beneficial, because one can draw religious principles from her, she was now rendered poor and calfless. Her legs were being beaten by a Shudra. There were tears in her eyes, and she was distressed and weak. She was hankering after some grass in the field. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The next symptom of the age of Kali is the distressed condition of the cow. I should explain some background to the age of Kali. There are four ages that repeat in cycles, like the seasons repeat in cycles. And the first age is Satya Yuga. That is the golden age. And in each successive age, the people's qualities become degraded and their duration of life becomes shorter. So there's Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. We are in the age of Kali. And in each age, a different process of self-realization or God-realization is recommended. In Satya Yuga, it's meditation. In Treta Yuga, it's performance of sacrifice. In Dwapara Yuga, it is temple worship. And in the present age, which is Kali Yuga, Yuga means age, it's the chanting of the holy names, which is very good for us. So, the next symptom of the age of Kali is the distressed condition of the cow. Milking the cow means drawing the principles of religion in a liquid form. Great rishis and munis would live only on milk. Srila Shukadeva Goswami would go to a householder while he was milking a cow, and he would simply take a little quantity of milk for subsistence. Even 50 years ago, no one would deprive a sadhu or holy person of a quart or two of milk. And every householder would give milk like water. For a follower of Vedic principles, it is the duty of every householder to have cows and bulls as household paraphernalia, not only for drinking milk, but also for deriving religious principles. The cow's milk is required for the sacrificial fire, and by performing sacrifices, the householder can be happy. The milk is turned into ghee, which is clarified butter. And the ghee is used in the sacrifices. The cow's milk is required for the sacrificial fire, and by performing sacrifices, the householder can be happy. The cow's calf is not only beautiful to look at, but also gives satisfaction to the cow, and so she delivers as much milk as possible. But in the Kali Yuga, the calves are separated from the cows as early as possible for purposes that may not be mentioned in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. The cow stands with tears in her eyes. The Shudra milkman draws milk from the cow artificially. And when there is no milk, the cow is sent to be slaughtered. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in the present society. People do not know what they are doing in the name of economic development. The influence of Kali will keep them in the darkness of ignorance. Despite all endeavors for peace and prosperity, they must try to see the cows and the bulls happy in all respects. Foolish people do not know how one earns happiness by making the cows and bulls happy, but it is a fact by the law of nature. Let us take it from the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam and adopt the principles for the total happiness of humanity. So there are three modes of nature as described by Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. There is tamoguna, which is the mode of ignorance, is characterized by laziness, sleep, intoxication, and so on. Then higher than the mode of ignorance is the mode of passion, called Rajaguna, which is characterized by like feverish endeavor to make money and enjoy sense gratification. And then higher than the mode of passion is the mode of goodness, Sattvaguna, which is characterized by peacefulness, austerity, cleanliness, and brahminical qualities. And then above Sattvaguna is a Shuddha Sattva, or the transcendental platform beyond even the highest material mode of nature. So the cows are in Sattvaguna, And just by associating with cows, you become elevated to the sattvic position. Once I was at an ashram we have at Govardhan Hill in India, where we keep cows. I wouldn't say it's the main activity, but we do keep cows there. And so my godbrother, fellow devotee, Keshava Bharati Das Goswami, and I wanted to find a place to sit and talk. So he suggested that we sit by the cows. And he quoted Srila Prabhupada as saying that just by being near the cows, you become elevated to the mode of goodness. So they're very special creatures, and therefore they must be protected and made happy in all respects. Text 4. Maharaj Parikshit, well equipped with arrow and bow, and seated on a gold embossed chariot, spoke to him, the low class man, with a deep voice resounding like thunder. Purport. The administrative head or king, like Maharaj Parikshit, with full majestic authority, well equipped with weapons to chastise miscreants, can challenge the agents of the age of Kali. Then only will it be possible to counteract the degraded age. In the absence of such strong executive heads, there is always disruption of tranquility, as we are experiencing vividly. The elected show bottle executive head, as representative of a degraded public, I mean, the public has to be degraded. Otherwise, how could they elect such a... I shouldn't make it too specific. Otherwise, how could they elect such degraded... Yes. The elected show bottle executive head, as representative of a degraded public, cannot be equal to a strong king like Maharaj Parikshit. The dress or style of royal order does not count. It is one's actions that are counted. So, the next verse tells us what King Parikshit said to that low-class person. Oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless? By your dress, you pose yourself to be a godly man, king. But by your deeds, you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are called twice-born because for these higher classes of men, there is one birth by parental conjugation, and there is another birth of cultural rejuvenation by spiritual initiation by the bona fide acharya, or spiritual master. So we've just had some initiations in the temple, and those who are initiated are called dvija. Ja is, refers to taking birth, and dvi refers to second. So this is a second birth. First birth is from the material parents, and second birth is from the spiritual master. The modern society is not twice born by spiritual culture. Therefore, the people's government, by the people who are not twice born, must be a government of Kali, in which everyone is unhappy. Text 6. You rogue, do you dare beat an innocent cow? Because Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the carrier of the Gandiva bowl, are out of sight? Since you are beating the innocent in a secluded place, you are considered a culprit and therefore deserve to be killed. Purport. In a civilization where God is conspicuously banished, and there is no devotee warrior like Arjuna, the associates of the age of Kali take advantage of this lawless kingdom and arrange to kill innocent animals like the cow in secluded slaughterhouses, as is going on. Such murderers of animals stand to be condemned to death by the order of a pious king like Maharaj Parikshit. For a pious king, the culprit who kills an animal in a secluded place is punishable by the death penalty, exactly like a murderer who kills an innocent child in a secluded place. So the cows are like children. I mean, they have all the sentiments of a human being, but their consciousness is not so developed like a child's consciousness, and therefore they're helpless and they should be protected. Text 7. Then Maharaj Parikshit asked the bull, "Oh, who are you? Are you a bull as white as a white lotus? Or are you a demigod? You have lost three of your legs and are moving on only one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull?" So the demigods, just like on this planet there are so many relativities of degrees of culture among different people in different places, so within the universe there are different planets. Some of them are higher than the Earth and some are lower. There are 14 planetary systems, and the Earth is in the seventh. So it's sort of in the middle, but on the lower side of the middle. And then there are seven above it. We have that expression, seventh heaven. I don't know if that comes from there, but it sounds like it could. It would certainly be appropriate. So, the residents of the higher planets are called demigods. Those higher planets are basically in the mode of goodness, and those demigods are, very advanced beings. They have very long durations of life. and they are free to travel within the universe. Like, we can't. We're basically stuck here on Earth. But the demigods have such powers that they can visit the Earth if they want. So here, King Parikshit is asking the bull, are you some demigod who has come in the form of a bull to give us grief by your suffering? Then Maharaj Parikshit asked the bull, oh, who are you? You are a bull as white as a white lotus. Are you a bull as white as a white lotus? Or are you a demigod? You have lost three of your legs and are moving on only one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull? So the significance of the bull having lost three legs is explained soon. Purport. At least up to the time of Maharaj Parikshit, no one could imagine the wretched conditions of the cow and the bull. Maharaj Parikshit, therefore, was astonished to see such a horrible scene. He inquired whether the bull was not a demigod, assuming such a wretched condition to indicate the future of the cow and the bull. So one day in Santa Barbara, where I have a base, I was sitting on a bench chanting japa. And a man came and sat next to me. And somehow he started talking, and he said that his girlfriend was a vegetarian, and she wouldn't have anything to do with him unless he became a vegetarian. So she, I guess she had him look at a video of a slaughterhouse or something, and when he saw both the cruelty of the slaughterhouse and the suffering of the innocent cows, he did become a vegetarian. Text 8. Now, for the first time in a kingdom well protected by the arms of the kings of the Kuru dynasty, I see you grieving with tears in your eyes. Up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. Purport. The protection of the lives of both the human beings and the animals is the first and foremost duty of a government. A government must not discriminate in such principles. So the Sanskrit word for citizen is praja. And sort of literally it means someone who's born in that place. And so Srila Prabhupada would say the cows, they're also praja, they're also born there. So they should also be protected by the state. It is simply horrible for a pure-hearted soul to see organized animal killing by the state in this age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit was lamenting for the tears in the eyes of the bull, and he was astonished to see such an unprecedented thing in his good kingdom. men and animals were equally protected as far as life was concerned. That is the way in God's kingdom. Text 9. O son of Surabhi, you need lament no longer now. There is no need to fear this low class Shudra. And, O Mother Cow, as long as I am living as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. Texts 10 and 11. O chaste one, listen to this, the leaders, they don't know what reactions they will face as a result of their negligence of their real duties. O chaste one, the king's good name, duration of life, and good rebirth vanishes when all kinds of living beings are terrified by miscreants in his kingdom. It is certainly the prime duty of the king to subdue first the sufferings of those who suffer. Therefore, I must kill this most wretched man because he is violent against other living beings. King Parikshit repeatedly addressed and questioned the bull thus, O son of Surabhi, who has cut off your three legs? In the state of the kings who are obedient to the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, there is no one as unhappy as you. O bull, you are offenseless and thoroughly honest. Therefore, I wish all good to you. Please tell me of the perpetrator of these mutilations, which blackmail the reputation of the sons of Pritha. Whoever causes offenseless living beings to suffer must fear me anywhere and everywhere in the world. By curbing dishonest miscreants, one automatically benefits the offenseless. An upstart living being who commits offenses by torturing those who are offenseless shall be directly uprooted by me, even though he may be a denizen of heaven with armor and decoration. The supreme duty of the ruling king is to give all protection to law-abiding persons and to chastise those who stray from the ordinances of the scriptures in ordinary times when there is no emergency. Dharma, the bull, the personality of religion, said, these words just spoken by you befit a person of the Pandava dynasty. Captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas, even Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, performed duties as a messenger. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. So this is getting back to Kartikeya Prabhu's question. Some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare one, that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible. And the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. This is a very important question, because nobody wants to be unhappy. We don't want to be unhappy, so what is the cause of our unhappiness? There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage among kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Suta Goswami said, O best among the Brahmanas, the Emperor Parikshit, thus hearing the personality of religion speak, was fully satisfied, and without mistake or regret, he gave his reply. The king said, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A devotee's conclusion is that no one is directly responsible for being a benefactor or mischief monger without the sanction of the Lord. Therefore, he does not consider anyone to be directly responsible for such action. But in both cases, he takes it for granted that either benefit or loss is God-sent, and thus it is God's grace. In case of benefit, no one will deny that it is God-sent. But in the case of loss or reverses, one becomes doubtful about how the Lord could be so unkind to his devotee as to put him in great difficulty. Jesus Christ was seemingly put into such great difficulty, being crucified by the ignorant, but he was never angry at the mischief mongers. This is the way of accepting a thing, either favorable or unfavorable. Thus, for a devotee, the identifier is equally a sinner, like the mischief monger. By God's grace, the devotee tolerates all reverses. Maharaj Parikshit observed this, and therefore he could understand that the bull was no other than the personality of religion himself. In other words, a devotee has no suffering at all, because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. The cow and bull never placed any complaint before the king for being tortured by the personality of Kali. Although everyone lodges such complaints before the state authorities, the extraordinary behavior of the bull made the king conclude that the bull was certainly the personality of religion, for no one else could understand the finer intricacies of the codes of religion. So, (clears throat) I won't read more because of the time factor, but the Bhagavatam goes on to explain that in the age of Satya, truthfulness, which I mentioned, the first of the four, the bull's four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. So each of those three sort of negate the virtues. In other words, pride negates austerity, lust for women negates cleanliness, and intoxication negates mercy. So the only one of those four legs that remains, and that's also a little weak, is truthfulness. So just the last few sentences of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, we must always remember that false pride, or too high an estimation of one's own values of life, undue attachment to women or association with them, and intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace, however much people clamor for peace in the world. The preaching of the Bhagavatam principles will automatically render all people austere, clean both inside and outside, merciful to the suffering, and truthful in daily behavior. That is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which are very prominently exhibited at the present moment. So, what we are doing, or I should say what Srila Prabhupada did and what we are attempting to do, following his instructions and example, is to distribute the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, which can really rectify the whole society, which is completely topsy-turvy to the influence of Kali. So there are some spiritualists who are just concerned about their own salvation, but that was not at all the mood of Srila Prabhupada or his predecessors. And one of our authorities, he lived a long time ago, Prahlad Maharaj, he said that, you know, generally saintly persons go to the mountains or the jungles and perform vows of silence, and they avoid the cities and towns where people congregate, and they just focus on their own deliverance. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm not like them, but I'm concerned about the poor fools and rascals who are making plans to be happy in this material world. And I am making plans how to deliver them. So, yeah, that's the mood of the devotees. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes, Nandini?
So, the examples were given by Dharma of the different possibilities for our for nature, for our karma, for our actions, etc. And so, when we see, like for example, we've seen so much mass slaughter, like it just happened, for example, in El Paso, and it's rampant. You know. So,
too many guns.
Yes. The perpetrator, when you accuse this person, if they live, sometimes they commit suicide.
Yeah, that's true.
That is the fault of the individual that's been shot and laying in the hospital fighting for their life. If they identify that person that has committed that violent act, so it's ultimately the karma of the perpetrator as well as the karma of the individual that has been the recipient of the perpetrator. And is it like that? That's what the complete understanding is, and this is. I remember Gurudev did give a class about the the atrocities that Hitler, all the Jews that were just incinerated, and so it's karma, but it's heavy nourish. And so, but we have compassion, even though we acknowledge that it's like that, we have compassion. Because so many of them, I'm sure, people that are recipients of such violence that survive are filled with many things. Some of them filled with anger and rage, and maybe some of them are grateful that they've survived. I mean, how does it all work with today, not with that example that we see in the Bhagavatam? Can you comment a little bit on that?
Well, what is the exact question?
Well, it's both of their karmas coming together.
Yeah.
The perpetrator and the recipient and the victim, and if the victim survives and identifies that perpetrator that maybe has raped a woman or violated, that person that identifies that person suffers the same reaction as the perpetrator, is it?
Well, I wouldn't say so, because the criminals should be identified so they can be arrested and contained and reformed. Otherwise, Rome at large, and they could harm other people. I mean, here Maharaj Parikshit saw the perpetrator and took action. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we need to do that. There's also there's one's personal mood, and then there's one's social responsibility. So personally, one might feel, this is Krishna, it's all Krishna. I have no complaint, whatever Krishna does. But, socially, one needs to point out the criminal, so he can be, you know, contained and rectified. Yes, Madhuri Gopika.
So other than the perpetrator of like shooting violence, the perpetrators we see every day, you know, with eating meat and, you know, probably kicking a dog or something like that, how can we help those helpless animals in today's day and age?
Well, I mean, the real solution, it, you know, might take some time, but it's to make the public first class, you know, twice more, so they elect first class people who don't allow all sorts of nonsense. You know, otherwise we can do what we can as individuals. And to accomplish the first thing that I said, we need to distribute Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm.
Setting the example.
Yes. Yeah, we must set the example. Must practice what we preach. It's true.
And let them know wrong from right.
Yes. Yeah. There's a statement that suffering comes from sin. Sin means transgressing the laws of God. So suffering comes from sin, and sin comes from ignorance, like you were saying. And so by removing ignorance, we can help people become sinless and thus free from suffering.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I grew up in Argentina. I was there until I was 23.
Were you born in Argentina?
I was, yeah. Born in Argentina. My Italian grandparents. And Argentina, you know, it's just such a meat-eating country.
Yeah.
And one of the top exporters of. And when I grew up in there, I just grew up, so the culture was that, and I ate it. Until I got information that...
I threw everything out.
Yeah, the animals are sold. I didn't. Yeah, that's... And I didn't throw everything out of the refrigerator. But, you know, I mean, it's a good example that to say that by... giving knowledge,
yes.
Then one.
Yeah.
Because he was, no, we didn't think of anything at the time. You know?
Well, you talked about meat consumption in Argentina, right?
Right.
I think what Maharaj says, ignorance. The world is kept ignorant by commercial interest.
Yeah.
I sent out a video the other day to the group that I recently got onto. If you look at the video, you will see leading personalities. One to mention is Schwarzenegger, who says, the stuff that I've been told all my life, I've got to have meat to build my muscles, and I got my meat provides the protein. If you listen to that video, plus a whole slew of other personalities, global personalities, it'll open your eyes and mind as to how the world is programmed for the sake of commercialism.
Yeah.
And I guess Maharaj will say that probably falls in the Kali Yuga that we are in.
Yes. This video, Maharaj, is called a Game Changer, and it's a documentary about all these people that are vegetarians, and they are athletes, and they, you know, proving, and exposing the whole thing that, some of them are, amazing.
Yeah, ITV had something like that.
ITV, right?
There was a morning walk in Juhu, and somebody brought up, that you have to eat meat, to be strong. And Prabhupada's disciple Brahmananda was on the walk. And Prabhupada said, "You see this man here, Brahmananda? He's a vegetarian, and he could crush you in a moment." But it's true about the commercial interests. Like, some years ago, I don't know if it was McDonald's hamburgers, it might have been. They found that that children were becoming aware that eating meat involved the killing of animals, and they didn't want to eat. So McDonald's produced a commercial that showed hamburgers hanging from the branches of trees, as if they were fruit. Yeah.
Wow.
So diabolical.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is commercial interest.
Yeah, it's unconscionable that they would do that. Telling all these kids here, don't listen to that stuff that it came from cow meat. Mm-hmm. It came from trees. It came from blood. It's unconscionable. It's commercial.
Yeah.
It's the buck.
Yeah.
We had a meeting in Houston, like the all the ISKCON leaders. And so they had invited as a special guest speaker a man who had attacked the meatpacking industry, very strongly on the Oprah Winfrey show.
I was going to blurt it out, Maharaj, but yes.
Yeah.
So the meatpacking industry filed a case against him.
Yes.
That his defamatory words were affecting their business. But they lost.
They lost.
They lost.
Freedom of speech, right of expression.
It's interesting, Maharaj, because there's several companies now. One of them is called Beyond Meat.
Oh, I heard about that.
It's vegan, and it's gone in many, like Carl's Jr.'s is carrying all these vegan, chains and so forth. Kentucky Fried Chicken is offering their vegan chicken nuggets, all vegan.
Plant-based.
What's quite interesting, Maharaj, is the media on Google and everything, because I don't have TV, but we watch, that they're saying how meat is more healthy. This stuff is, on and on. Slamming this, and I thought, whoa, because it's really hitting, more and more vegans. It's powerful in this country. People are just saying no.
Yeah.
So it's true. It was interesting to see.
Canada, for example, claims to have 4 million confirmed vegans as of yesterday.
Yeah.
Confirmed vegans.
Yeah.
I say those that vary off and on, probably goes around 6 or 7. And that's probably 20% of their population.
Yeah, it's powerful what's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you suppose so many people continue to eat meat are so vehemently against becoming a vegetarian? They can't be that addicted to
meat.
Yeah. It's almost like
you don't fill them up.
Well, that would the answer be ignorance on the part of so many people that vehemently oppose being vegetarian? Ignorance, would you say?
I mean,
I think it's ignorance.
Sure it is.
But there's something that you even try to...
There's the dollar sign.
But there's some you can show these videos to. Like, you spoke of the gentleman at the party.
Yeah.
And they're like, I've seen them.
Yeah.
Or they'll refuse to watch, even though they know.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example, right? That by misfortune... The finest guy, or amongst the very few finest guys in my life, the guy sitting across there, right at that window, him and I were at the Petroleum Club here in Dallas around 40 years back. Give or take 40. We get invited to this Petroleum Club by Hard Knock, Big Shot, bankers of downtown Dallas. You know, you get served by guys that white napkins on their hands, like your Prince Rossi and Prince Farini walking in there. And the server comes out to take our orders. Here's his server, okay? And we say, he says, I am vegetarian. I said, that goes for me too. Mm-hmm. You know what the servant says to him?
What?
You gotta be from India. Huh? Now, let me finish, right? He looks at this cat and it says, you gotta be from India. Right here in the heart of educated, solidly financial, richest part of the world or the planetary system, you got this cat. Telling him, you gotta be from India. So you know what this guy responded? Your memory is like a sieve. He said, actually, I became a vegetarian when I arrived in this country. So we were with a bunch of lawyers and bankers. None of those guys, beautiful steak eaters, had anything much to say. With Jim Terrell, when he was at the Republic Bank downtown, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what you got, ignorance. Yeah. Assumptions, you know, presumptuous. Now, you got to be from here. You got to be
from
here. You know, but anyway.
Well, that's to avoid their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're saying, oh, you got to be from India. I mean,
right.
That explains it.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's strange. Oh, when that strange vegetarian thing happens in India, it ain't so.
But that was so many years ago. Today, now it's like,
oh, today is different.
Like, yeah, you know, the rage. And even many people will say they feel better. They feel healthier.
Yeah.
They feel healthier.
Today is very, very different. You're right. And today, you know, nobody's abashed. Ashamed to say I'm vegetarian or I'm this. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is who I am. You don't like it, take a hike. Sorry, Maharaj, you know. I get a little passionate.
You're just talking about that. No, this is transcendental. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, you talked about the three modes of material nature. And sometimes even in the middle of practicing our devotional services or spiritual practices, we sometimes get influenced by the mode of passion or ignorance. So how do we overcome that?
That's a very good point. The third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam discusses this. And Srila Prabhupada paraphrased it very nicely. He said that a devotee influenced by the mode of ignorance thinks, I'm the only devotee around here. No one else is a devotee. A devotee influenced by the mode of passion thinks, I want to be the best devotee. I want to be known as being the best devotee. A devotee influenced by the mode of goodness thinks, I want to go back home, back to Godhead. And a devotee who's transcendental beyond the modes thinks, I just want to serve Krishna and please serve Krishna. So, like most things, just being aware of it is a good beginning. And so if you find yourself affected by those mentalities, you can just be aware that, you know, this is the mode of ignorance, you know, or the mode of passion. Even the mode of goodness, which is good, but not the best, not completely transcendental. And otherwise, the general process for becoming free from the influence of the modes is to take shelter of Krishna. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Devi hiesa gunamai mama maya duratyaya ma meviye prapadyanche maya metam tarantite, that this material nature consisting of the three modes is very difficult to overcome, but one who takes shelter of me can easily overcome. And then to take shelter of Krishna means take shelter of the holy name, take shelter of the scriptures, take shelter of the association of pure devotees or good devotees, advanced devotees. Yes, Nandini.
So in that regard, like so many people work, and then that's passion. You know, they're working, whatever.
Usually.
So in the morning, it's like a kavacha. If you chant, isn't it? It kind of helps you to go through that day, that passion, maybe a little bit not so influenced, would you say?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, the different times of the day are also influenced by different modes. So like the early hours are like more in the mode of goodness, and then the day is more in the mode of passion. Night is more the mode of ignorance. So it is highly recommended to get up early in the morning, especially during the Brahma Muhurta period, which begins an hour and a half about before sunrise. And one spirit, the spiritual practices are enhanced then. And this fact is known in many traditions. When I was based in Bombay, I made friends with a group of Muslims. And they would actually come to the Juhu temple early in the morning. And they said that, you know, that Allah, this is gets stated in their holy books, that Allah hears your prayers more if you do them before sunrise. So, yeah. And our God brother in Gainesville, Kalakanta Prabhu, often says that the best advice he can give someone for their spiritual practices is to take rest early.
Yes.
So then they can get up early and then everything else follows.
Yeah.
So you got to get up early, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Maharaj, we got a dog who's 15 and a half, 16 years old. That sweetheart got me up early, kind of very early, to go to the bathroom. I got out of bed. Now she's gotten old and she's forgotten what Krishna told her to tell me to do. That little baby gets me up, and then I go walking and stuff like that. But anyway,
and tomorrow sunrise is at 7:30, so an hour and a half before that.
6 o'clock.
Six or something like that.
That's fair.
Well, what time?
Check the Google Gurus, you see.
7:15 here. Oh, what? Oh, in my location, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's 7:15.
Oh, well, anyway. The way Srila Prabhupada arranged the morning program, regardless of sunrise, is it starts at 4:30. So, we should get up by then. I mean, just to chant, to start chanting an hour and a half before sunrise means you have to get up before then and bathe and get ready. Yes?
Somebody told me that the rounds you chant before Mangala Arati are twice as good. I wanted to know if that was true.
2:30.
Well, it could be. I mean, I do know devotees who get up very early and chant before Mangala Arati. And, I read, I think it was a coincidence, but I read that Srila Prabhupada got up during a certain period. He got up at 3 in the morning. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also got up at 3 in the morning. Some devotees get up at 2. But it's considered very bad to sleep through sunrise or sunset.
And the reason for that is because you stay in the mode of ignorance.
Well, I asked my Ayurvedic doctor, who's very knowledgeable in Ayurvedic Shastra. And he said, yes, if you sleep through sunrise, it brings on the mode of ignorance. He said you can counteract it by chanting, but it brings on the mode of ignorance. And he didn't mention specifically about sleeping through sunset, but I know it's very bad to sleep through sunrise or sunset. Yes?
So I wanted to introduce your books. These are 3 different books written by this gentleman here. So Water in the Seed, it covers various topics, but it's really good if someone is starting being introduced to Krishna consciousness, because it's topical, so many different things you can learn about. And then the second book is Many Moons on the far right, which is the little biographies of modern day saints. And Life's Final Lesson is a lesson that we all have to deal with, which is death and dying from the Vedic perspective. So we all have to learn that subject, even if we want to skip out of college or whatever. You still got to take.
Yeah, the life's final exam is the other two are more for devotees.
Yeah.
I mean, they're for, but life's final exam is really for anyone, and many people who are not devotees have gotten a lot from it, and many have said they wish they had it earlier. Well, the title comes from a saying by Chanakya Pandit that one moon, Ekachandras, one moon creates more illumination than many stars. And Srila Prabhupada applied that to his preaching mission. saying that he could have made, if he lowered his standards, he could have made, millions of disciples, cheap disciples. But they would have been like those stars twinkling in the sky without producing any real illumination. So he said, his mission was to make one moon. And then he said, by Krishna's grace, I have many moons. So that's where the title comes from. And the book is about nine moonlight devotees of Srila Prabhupada who left their bodies. And six were his direct disciples, starting with Jayananda Prabhu, then Gaura Govinda Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Sridhar Swami, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Bhakti Sridhamadar Swami. And then three were grand disciples, in other words, disciples of his disciples. And one was Mother Kirtida, who was a disciple of Tamal Krishna Goswami. She left her body right here in Dallas. And one was Abhiram Thakur. He was originally in West Pakistan. That's where I met him. A very saintly person. But it became very bad for the Hindus in Pakistan. So he was able to come to India. And then one is my disciple named Archavigraha Devi Dasi, who was from South Africa. They all have very glorious lives and departures. Yeah. You can learn a lot about how to face death, how to prepare for death, how to lead a good life, and be ready for death.
So I say, John, Maharaj is very kind and very helpful. I didn't have the opportunity to say this, I think last Saturday, in the congregation. But nonetheless, Maharaj is very kind to my wife and me. Maharaj has personally given me a book, Life Final Exam. I read it corner to corner. It helped me with my suffering that I'd explained to Maharaj. We lost, my wife and I lost our son. I was going through real hell. I talked to Maharaj. Maharaj heard me out in that silence and just absolute right and absolute love. And he asked me to read the book and I did. Mm-hmm. It kind of helped me for sure.
Yeah.
And I'd recommend to anybody that book and any others that you have the energy to read, I think you should.
Which one, Life's Final Exam?
Yeah. I don't kid you. We lost our son, a 33-year-old kid, an assistant attorney general, the hot shot in Washington, D.C. We lost him. He broke our hearts. We couldn't get over our mourning. Maharaj didn't talk to him. He helped me. He didn't say he was going to bring my boy back, but he said, read the book, Life's Final Exam. It just opens your mind on how to accept situations as they arise, and they arrive, and how to work with it. So it's helped me very, very much. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Wonderful. So, what's next?
Prasadam.
You know what prasadam is? I will give a 1 minute or so explanation. But Prasad literally means mercy. It's food that has been prepared with love and devotion for Krishna and offered to Krishna with love and devotion. And Krishna has eaten that food. But he's so kind, he could if he wanted to, but he, although he eats it, he doesn't consume it in such a way that it there's nothing for us. But he leaves the remnants as prasad. So it's a spiritual food. Yeah, that's right. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those who prepare food just for their bodily nourishment, even vegetarian, eat only sin. But those who eat the remnants of food that have been offered in sacrifice to Krishna, they become freed from all sins by that eating. So this is a very spiritual experience and a very purifying act. You'll have some, okay. All right. Mahaprasad ki jai.